Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the Principal Advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to cover the first two-part series related to taxes. This first part today is going to cover some last-minute tax planning tips that you can do for the 2023 tax year. And then I'm also going to summarize some of the key documents that you'll be providing your accountant this time of year. Then next month, I'm going to go over some of the key lines on your tax return and how we can engage in some active tax planning for 2024. You can also reference my blog post on this topic, which includes a federal tax bracket table for both married filing jointly as well as singles. So it shows you the income levels and when the next tax bracket kicks in for the 2023 tax year. And I also show the capital gains tax rates. Most people think it's just one, 15%. There's actually four of them. So take a look at the table and check it out. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial investment advice, and in particular this month, not accounting advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So starting at the blog post, again, we are not an accountant here. I'm not providing tax advice, but we do understand tax returns quite well. We do quite detailed tax planning for our clients. And so it's a way that we can definitely add value by picking up some tax benefits for the clients, put them in control of how they recognize income to the extent we can, and it avoids the tax surprises when they're doing their returns. And so definitely it's a great thing that they enjoy. If that sounds appealing to you, just let us know how we can help. So my blog post is going to be structured into two main points. The first major topic I'm going to discuss here is some year-end tax planning that you still have time for the 23 tax year. These few things that you can do, make sure you coordinate them with your accountant, but the few things that you still can do. The first one is IRA contributions. So you still have time up through tax filing to contribute for the 2023 tax year. Everybody can contribute to an IRA. Whether it's deductible or not, and if you can put it into a Roth or not, that depends upon your modified adjusted gross income and other factors. But the key point is everybody can contribute. It's just a matter of do you get a deduction or not and where it goes. The other thing that some people may not be aware of is if you participate in a 401k plan or a 403b plan through your employer, you still can also participate in an IRA. So a couple of myths I just want to get out of the way here. Everybody can do it. And even if you could participate in another plan. The amount that you can put in, it's capped at the lesser of eligible taxable compensation or $6,500, whichever is less. So if you make a reasonable amount of money, $6,500 is your limit. If you are 50 years or older, you can do an extra $1,000 for 2023. Just FYI, those numbers are $7,000 for 2024. It's still $1,000, but it is starting to be indexed to inflation, so eventually that'll start ticking up as well. And the other thing to point out with IRA contributions is that sometimes people miss out on this. If one of the spouses is not working, they can rely upon the other spouse's income to make their own contribution. So it's called a spousal IRA. So I'd highly recommend people doing that as well if they weren't doing it. If one spouse, say, for example, is staying home, they still can have their own IRAs and contribute to them, relying upon the other spouse's income. So definitely, it's an area that we see people missing out on a lot. So definitely take a look at it. If you have questions, give us a call. The other area for 2023 tax planning is the health savings accounts, or HSAs. These are different than flexible spending accounts, FSAs. So FSAs, that ship has sailed for 2023. But for health savings accounts, you are still allowed to make those contributions for the 2023 tax year as well. Excuse me. You have to first make sure you have a high deductible health plan as your underlying health insurance. If you're not sure, check with your provider. Ask them if it's an HDHP, it's called. And the other thing, anybody can, if you have one of those plans, high deductible plan, Anybody can contribute tax-deductible contributions regardless of income. So there is no income limits on HSA eligibility or deductibility. It's just a matter of, do you have a qualified plan underneath? The maximum amount for 2023, if you're single, it's $3,850. If you are a family heavy payment plan, that is $7,750. And then if you're over 55 years old or older, you can also do a $1,000 catch-up, provided that you have your own HSA account. Two things to clarify there. I said 55 or older, not 50. So a little different than IRAs. You have to wait till 55 for the HSA catch-up. And two, if you have a family plan, for example, oftentimes the HSA is opened up in one of a person's account and they're doing the full family amount. Plus, when they hit age 55, they put in their extra $1,000. If the spouse is also over age 55 and wants to do this $1,000 catch up, they can. They just need to open up their own HSA account. So it can be done. And then some of you may be thinking, well, that's great, Kirk, but I missed it. I do my payroll deduction. I didn't hit this maximum. Darn, let's try it next year. And I say, no, you definitely can still do it for the 2023 tax year. Just contact the HSA custodian, wherever your plan is at, and ask them where you can mail your check, and you can mail in a check to hit that maximum. So again, $3,850 for a single, $7,750 for a family plan, $1,000 extra if you're 55 or older, fully deductible regardless of income. So definitely a good thing to hit, provided you've got that medical plan underneath. And then finally, doesn't apply to all of you, but for those that who are employer, like owners, maybe you're sole proprietors, schedule C income on LLCs, perhaps. Your employer, the employee portion, so you as the employee, you're done there. So you would have had to got that in by now. And so there's a couple of exceptions, which I won't get into here, but for the employer portion, so they can put on your employer hat, you can still make those contributions up until tax filing time. So again, with all three of these, coordinate with your accountant, see what can be done. Or your financial advisor, if they're savvy like us on tax planning, find out what can be done and then coordinate with the accountant to make sure it gets on the forms properly. So that is the quick summary of the year-end tax planning things that you can still do for 2023. If you filed your taxes ready, congratulations, you're a bit early. But if you hear some of these things, you can still, if it's worthwhile, redo it and file an amendment, or some of them may not have any impact on the tax returns. So it's just a matter of filing an extra, say, Form 8606 or something. So check with your accountant and see if it's worthwhile doing, even if you finished your taxes for 23. Jumping now to the second major section of this blog post and podcast, and that is what are some of those common tax documents that you've been providing to your accountant? So what are those common documents? This isn't an all-inclusive list, but covers most of them. What I'm going to cover here is a form name, what it mainly covers, and then to the extent that if it's a different tax treatment, I'll do a high-level summary. Again, I reference you to my blog post. This is all laid out in bullet point fashion, so easy to consume. So the first form, the W-2, that's going to contain your wages and compensation from an employer. Also going to show any taxes withheld throughout the year. Very important because you already paid part of the bill. And then just a quick heads up here, if you're contributing to a deductible 401k or tax deductible or a tax deductible health savings account, even a flexible spending accounts here, oftentimes that's all just netted out of your wages, and your wages that they show in box one is already after any deductible savings. And so you may not have to provide those breakouts via W-2. And it's different if you have your own business. If you also are fortunate to have stock grants and options and RSUs, et cetera, definitely be careful there. There's going to be additional documents surrounding that income. So just make sure what's shown as W-2 wages, if there's supporting documents for option grants and additional tax forms, make sure you get those to your accountant. And then the other, on the income side, the 1099 MISC, it's called MISC, miscellaneous. That covers non-employer income sources. So the threshold is over $600. If you're doing part-time work or consulting work or what have you, if you're doing something for a given person and you get paid more than $600, they're going to give you a 1099 MISC, MISC, miscellaneous. Now jumping over to the common forms that you're going to get from your custodians on the investing world that we do here. The first one, the most common one, is the 1099 consolidated. So may have been like the 1099 Bs or 1099 dividends, et cetera. Your non-qualified investment accounts is going to send that to you. You would have received it by now. And in there, that's going to include all of the taxable income related to securities that you still hold in that account or ones that you've traded in that particular account over the past, during that calendar year 2023. So a couple of the types, you know, there's going to show dividend income. Some of it's qualified. Let's say if it's equity dividends, that's qualified. So you get better tax treatment, treated like long-term capital gains. Again, reference that table in my blog post. And then some of it could be ordinary income. If you have dividend income from REITs, for example, that is considered ordinary income. So they break that out. It also shows interest income. There you can have two types. It's normal taxable income, like interest on cash savings or bond income. That's normal taxable. And then if you had any municipals, that's considered tax exempt. They break that out. And then finally, the big one, capital gains. They break those out into long and short. So the short-term capital gains, if you held something for 1 year or less, that's considered a short-term gain, and you're taxed at ordinary income taxes there. And then if it's for more than a year, you get long-term treatment, which is much better. Again, just as an example, referencing the table up above, if you're in the 22% or higher bracket, it starts out at 15% and then and goes up from there. Again, I mentioned there's four capital gains rates, so check that out. What else in the consolidated? I think that's about it. And just one other thing, there is no 1099 consolidated for an IRA. So this is just for non-qualified, i.e. taxable accounts. Next form here I got is the 1099-R. That stands for, I don't know what the R stands for, but I guess retirement accounts. But what it shows is gross distributions and any tax withholdings from all types of IRAs or 401k accounts, including any inherited IRAs. And so if you took a withdrawal out of any of those types of accounts, you're going to get a 1099-R. You're going to get a separate form for each account you withdrew from. And there's special codes in there too. So again, your accountant knows what to do with them, or their TurboTax, make sure you know what to do with them so that you're not taxed inadvertently on things. But so for example, if you're doing a direct transfer, say you're going from one traditional IRA to another one, you're going to get a 1099-R because there was a withdrawal out of there. But direct transfers are not taxable, so just make sure you're aware of that. You know, any withdrawals that you would have done from an IRA, a traditional, maybe you're doing a Roth conversion. There it's going to say taxable, but make sure you follow all the rules because maybe with the 8606 and the like, some or all of it may not be taxable. So be careful there. And then finally, this is a big one. Those who do qualified charitable distributions, QCDs. So number one, you have to be over age 70 and a half to do these. But if you're making direct charitable contributions from your IRA, the 1099-R that you get is going to show just the gross distribution, whatever you took out of that account in total. It does not capture any QCD amounts. So make sure that you let your accountant know what those were, and they will do the necessary codes accordingly to make sure it's not taxable. But again, if people forget this, it just slips through the cracks, which is very unfortunate. So again, make sure you know any QCDs and let your accountant know about them. That's probably enough for that form. The next one, the 5498. This one also related to IRA accounts, and this captures contributions going in, or transfers going in, or Roth conversions coming in. So incoming IRAs is what's captured in the 5498. Now, most people would say, well, great, where do I find that so I can give that to my accountant to tell him what I did for 2023? Problem is, this form is not available until May. There's a reason for it. You are eligible to contribute, like I just mentioned earlier, to an IRA up to the tax filing time. So the custodians don't want to publish these and then have to republish them. So so it's there, but it's unfortunately not available right now. So to get the information, make sure you tell your accountant about contributions you've made. The best source is typically the year-end monthly statement for your IRA. And then if you did any contributions earlier this year for the previous tax year, you know, just grab the latest monthly statement for this current year, and that will show any activity. Again, contributions, and they'll break it out by tax year because, again, right now it could go to 23 or 24. So that's where your best source would be for something like that. And again, I mentioned earlier, everybody can contribute into an IRA, again, provided they have taxable compensation, but not all of it will be deductible, et cetera, et cetera. So just watch the rules. Next form, Form 1099 SA. So this is, I just went over the 1099-R and the 5498 for IRAs. Now I have two similar forms for health savings accounts, HSAs. So first one is a 1099 SA. That's going to reflect any distributions that you took out of your HSA account. You need to make sure they're qualified medical expenses. I won't get into that here, but provided that you have a qualified medical expense and you take it out, one strategy is not to withdraw if you have the source of funds elsewhere to cover medical bills. One strategy is to leave the money in there, pay your bills, you know, out of your checking account, and then just keep track of the bills and withdraw funds later. But I digress. And so that's an interesting strategy. Call if you have questions. But back to this form, if you took money out of the HSA, it will show you how much that was, and it's up to you to make sure you have records to justify that it was up against a qualified medical expense. Unlike IRAs, you will not receive any HSA to HSA transfer form. So if you're consolidating HSAs, or maybe you got an employer plan, but they kind of suck with the investment options, you can open up your own HSA, transfer a portion in. You got to keep the one there at the employer because that's where your payrolls go, but a balance you can move over, and you will not get an 1099 SA for that, unlike the IRAs. And then on the flip side, the related forms for money going in to the HSA, it's the 5498-SA. I guess it's just savings account. They dropped the H for some reason. But anyway, the SA, that will, again, same story. It comes out after the fact, and so you'll have to rely upon the statements for your HSAs to show how much you put in by tax year. Again, be careful with that, just like the IRAs. Another common form, if you do a donor-advised fund, so just briefly, these are accounts you can set up, and you contribute money into them and get the tax deduction as if you gave to a charity. And then down the years down the road, or right away, but in the future, you can make contributions to a charity. At the time then, you don't get any deduction, but you do get the full deduction going in up front. So if you've done that, they're a great strategy. Again, call with questions. You can contribute in there, and so make sure that you get the form and let the accountant know. It's just one form, just the money contributing, because again, you don't get the deduction going out, so there's no forms for withdrawals. Typically, your donor advised fund custodian will have an account summary statement or something to that effect. And so it will show you, either if you put in cash, it'll show you that dollar amount, and that's the deductible, or a better strategy, if it's possible, highly recommend donating appreciated securities. They do have to be long-term gained securities, so positions that are in long-term gain status, but you're able to avoid selling and realizing a long-term capital gains. And so you get the full deduction for the full market value, so pretty nice strategy to look at. So that's another form to be aware of. Next form here, 1099-Q. This relates to, again, 1099-Q is distributions from an account. Well, what kind of account is it, Kirk? It is a 529. So if you have a 529 for junior or juniorette and you took money out to pay the bills, you are going to get a form that shows that distribution from that account. That, again, has to be a qualified educational distribution. It's up to you to keep track of that stuff. Institutions will help you out on the tuition side. So you may get, I think it's called a 1098-T. It's been a couple of years since I've received these now, but the school will publish a 1098-T showing you the tuition portion. It might have some of the other things like fees and the like. I'm not sure anymore, but definitely the tuition is on there. But then there are other qualified educational expenses like room and board if they're living off campus or computer equipment. Again, check all the rules, but those expenses exist. It's up to you to keep track of those, and then you can justify why you took distributions from your 529 was to pay those qualified expenses. Again, flip side. So it's like, hey, I know where this one is going. Where's the 5498 for a 529? Time for the contributions going in. The short answer is there is none. I think the main reason there is none is because contributions into a 529 are not deductible at the federal level. So there is no IRS-prescribed form to capture this. However, some but not all states do allow you a state deduction. So there's not a particular form. Make sure, one, your state does allow a deduction up to limits. There's different rules, and each state is different. Some states don't even allow the deduction. Those states that don't have income tax, that doesn't apply. If you do have that situation, you're contributing, live in a state that allows that, again, similar to the IRAs, use the statement, the 529 statement from year end, and it should show you the amount, or it will show you the amount you contributed for the year. Unlike IRAs, this is one exception. 529 plans, you do have to have the money in by 12/31 of that given year. So that's why I did not mention this as that tax planning strategy that's still left for 23, because this one is not. And again, this is another area where we see a lot of people missing out on tax benefits. And so if you think this might apply, reach out for help, because it's a nice benefit if you have that situation in that state with children that you're trying to fund college for. And last but not least, it's not really a tax form, but it's just a heads up or a comment on digital assets. So crypto, you may think of them as crypto, but IRS and regulators call them digital assets. When you fill out the Form 1040 or when the accountant does it on your behalf, there is an explicit question now. And read through it. Read the instructions carefully. But in general, I'm generalizing here. Basically, it says, did you receive any income, yield, you know, yield harvesting or the like from digital assets, i.e. crypto? And part B, did you buy or sell? Well, sell, I guess. You bought them is okay if you're still holding them, but did you sell any digital assets that you have potential gain on? So you got to say yes or no. And if you say yes, read the instructions, be careful, but they are watching for making sure you report crypto/digital asset related income. So be careful with that. Don't mess around with it. And if you held coins, I guess 2 points here. One, if you purchased a security like the old Grayscales or now they didn't become available until spot Bitcoin ETFs became available in January of this year. But previous years, you would have been able to buy futures-based Bitcoin ETFs. And so if you did things like that, where you're able to buy and sell it on an exchange, that is going to be captured in your brokerage, your 1099s for the gain loss. So you're okay there. Again, still read the rules of yes or no, but in terms of the numbers, it's captured in the 1099. But if you held any digital assets directly, that's where you got to be very careful. You probably sold some stuff. Check with that custodian, whether it's, you know, Coinbase, Gemini, whatever the custodian may be, and make sure you get that reported. Okay, so that is the kind of the major part one of the tax-related series here. So just as a quick reminder, you still have some time to do some year-end 2023 tax planning. Coordinate with your accountant, but a lot of it just relates to still time to do contributions into IRAs and HSAs. So check the rules if you apply. If you qualify for deductions or not, but check it out. Backdoor Roths might be a good thing to do for some people, so check that out. And then the other section I talked about, all these various forms that you may have to give your accountant. Some of them I talked about may not apply to you, but I try to capture the more common ones across the spectrum of people filing taxes. So hopefully that was helpful. Again, if you do have QCDs, make sure you tell your accountant about that. That's a gotcha that many miss. One tax form I did not talk about, there is no tax form for this, but I like to joke it's the candy and ice cream tax that, you know, applies to children with parents with a sweet tooth. So there is no tax form for that, but it is a tasty withdrawal indeed. All right. Well, that's a wrap on today's topic. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.